When I was growing up, I heard a story about a bird and a merchant. The merchant often traveled to other countries to sell his fine wares. And each time, he would return home to his beloved bird, who sat in a cage for their melodic song. As he was preparing for his next journey, he lovingly asked his bird, "What gift can I bring back for you?" The bird replied, "Please tell the other birds of my plight, of how I am caged, of how I cry and speak only with myself." The merchant promised to deliver the message and set off on his journey. On his way back home, he passed through a forest where he came across a group of birds. They were sitting in trees, chatting amongst themselves, when he stopped and told them, "Dear friends, I've come to deliver a message." He then relayed what his bird had asked, and upon completion of his words, watched in horror as one of the birds shuddered and fell down dead. Ashamed and full of remorse for what he had done, the merchant hurried home. When he returned, the bird asked, "Tell me, what did the other birds say? How did they respond to my message?" "Heartbroken," the merchant replied, "when I told them of your plight, one shuddered and fell down dead." The bird, upon hearing this, grew stiff and dropped dead to the bottom of its cage. Grief-stricken, the merchant began to cry. "What have I done? My sweet bird, my dearest companion." He opened the cage door and gently removed the bird, resolving to bury it. When he took it outside and laid it on the grass, the bird suddenly opened its eyes and flew to the nearest tree. Amazed, the merchant called to the bird, "Is this real? Are you alive?" The bird responded, "I was in captivity because of my song, because I am beautiful. The other birds show me that if I want to be free, I have to die." The bird fluttered its wings and began its ascent into the sky. "Farewell, merchant. I am going home. One day, may you become free, just like me." Today, stories about the wildlife trade and what happens when we cage the things we love.
Welcome to Expedition Earth, a podcast where we reconnect to the wonders of our world and find a way to protect them. I'm your host, National Geographic Explorer Lily Sedigat. Together, we'll rediscover what makes us human.
All right, let's try an experiment. If you're sitting next to a window, open the window. If you're not, that's fine. Just close your eyes and imagine that you're standing in a park. There's some trees and there's some shrubs around you. You can hear cars driving past. You can hear people chattering, but you can also hear birds. And try and see if you can tell the different bird calls that you hear. Some of them are going to be very loud and very repetitive, and some are quite quiet and high-pitched, and some of them are just quite harsh, and some are very melodic. So just see how many you can hear.
Birds are all around us, in the forest, in the park. We can even hear them in the city.
And I think one of the most remarkable things about urban birds is you don't realize that they are there and that there's quite so many of them until you actually know what to look for.
This is Serene Chung.
I'm Serene. I'm from Singapore. I'm currently based in Malaysia. I consider myself a wildlife trade researcher.
Serene is part of an NGO called TRAFFIC, an organization that works on wildlife trade.
So one of the things I do is carry out research to collect data on what kinds of species are traded, in what volumes, and to understand better about whether the trade is causing a threat to their survival in the wild.
TRAFFIC monitors both the legal and illegal trade of wildlife to keep it from becoming a threat to the conservation of nature And Serene's focus is birds.
So my area of work mostly focuses on the live wildlife pet trade. And I'm a bird person, so birds hold a very special place in my heart. Birds signify freedom because they fly around and all, and they're sitting in a tree or in the wild, singing, looking for a mate to do the thing that they do in the wild.
The wildlife trade is damaging the populations of animals. Serene and her team monitor sales in live markets, in online groups. It all helps to see what's going on a larger scale. In recent years, they noticed 25,000 Oriental magpie robins, a popular songbird, had been trafficked from Malaysia and mostly sent to Indonesia. And while Indonesia used to have their own Oriental magpie robin population, the sudden spike in trafficking suggested that the birds were mostly gone in the wild.
Not many people think that birds are something that might disappear forever because you hear so many around us, you see birds every day. But there are bird species that are going extinct because of the trade. And just think about that, that one day maybe the Oriental magpie robin in your garden that you see there is not going to be there anymore because people are trapping it for the trade.
Part of the work means going out into the field and physically counting birds. Serene first learned this type of work as an undergraduate.
My journey with birds and watching them and learning about them has mostly been led by people who are more experienced than me.
She was volunteering at the time, following a group of researchers doing a shorebird census,
which essentially is going out to the mudflats and counting thousands and thousands of small brown birds that all look the same, but they are not the same.
She'd go up and down the area, counting shorebirds, trying to figure out what was what.
And that was really where I started learning how to tell them apart by sight and also by song.
Eventually, she got a job researching urban wildlife with the National Parks Board in Singapore.
And that's really where I learned a lot more about bird behavior, like why they do certain things and how certain behaviors help you to differentiate one species from another, or even the young from an adult.
Serene got really good at this. She's a musician, which helped her pick up on the pitch, quality, and tone of the calls.
When I'm bird watching, I'm actually bird listening a lot of the time. So sometimes I can't see the birds, but I can hear them calling. And by that call, I can tell, oh, okay, like there's a sunbird in this tree, or there's a bobo in this bush.
So can you give us an example? I'm going to close my eyes. And we're here in the studio. So I'm going to pretend like I'm outside. Can you give us a couple of demonstrations of different types of bird songs I might be able to hear?
Okay. This might not be a very accurate representation, but I'm going to try.
No worries. Go for it.
Some birds have very high-pitched, very simple calls. Some birds have more complicated, more melodic, more fluty calls. Some are very repetitive. And some are just like a one-off kind of call. Oh, and this one.
How many different species of birds and birds' calls are there?
Okay, in Singapore, there's probably about at least 300 birds. In Malaysia, there's way more than that because we got more habitats, more bigger forests as well. But I would say that like if you just stood in an urban garden or park, I could probably pick out about 20 species within earshot.
And it turns out there's sometimes a difference between bird song. And bird calls. Their songs are longer and more complex and tie closely with their behavior. Birds mostly use songs for two reasons.
So there, you've got a male bird trying to show off to a lady, and he's like, oh, hello, let me show you my songs.
One is mate attraction.
To prove their quality as a good mate, that's something that a female would want to choose them. And they also use it for territorial purposes to say that, okay, this is my patch and I'm going to protect this patch. I'm going to sing really loudly so you know this is my patch, so go away.
On the other hand, bird calls tend to be shorter, simpler.
So calls can be just like short chatter type things. Just tell each other, oh, hello, I'm here. Have you had breakfast yet?
Beyond the scientific reasons for why birds call or sing, there's something about a bird's song that speaks to humans. Our very being. Our sense of self. It's melodic. Subtle. Sharp. Something that plays in our urban environments. Part of the symphony in our wild spaces. So the question remains, why do we put birds in cages?
So quite a few researchers have been looking into the motivations behind keeping birds in cages. Some of it has more of a spiritual side where people find it's enjoyable to hear birds singing. They sit down and they enjoy the birds singing on their own terms so they can choose when they want to do it. To me, it seems like such a, like a pity or ironic that people like that song so much that they want to trap the bird that the song belongs to and put it in a cage so that they can listen to it on tap. And that, to me, it kind of corrupts the original purpose of the song.
So in a sense, moving a bird away from the wild, putting them into a cage, it does something to that bird.
Yeah. Some birds, they learn to sing when they're very young and then it crystallizes in their brains. But some species are able to learn throughout their life so they can expand their repertoire and they can adapt it depending on where they live. So yeah, putting a bird in a cage does change its song.
Caging a bird is actually part of a wider supply chain, a multi-level structure that begins in the wild and ends in captivity. Birds are trapped, traded, and sold in a long journey, and the most visible part of the supply chain is in the marketplaces and shops.
The very first market survey that I did in Indonesia involved going into a building where there's lots of stalls and counting all the birds that are being kept there. And it's, frankly, it's very overwhelming. It's overwhelming for the senses because you can hear all the yelling and squawking and shrieking from the birds. You can smell everything from the excrement of the birds, the rotting bird feed, the open drains, the cigarette smoke. And when we start walking along the narrow corridors, the sense of overwhelming becomes even more because there's so many birds and we have to count every single one of them and identify them. To count all of them is just a monumental task because there's cages on the floor, there's cages on the ceiling, there's cages lining all the walls. Sometimes there's one or two birds in each cage and sometimes there's about 100 or so birds in each cage. And it's really hard to count them because they're scared and they're really stressed. They're just fluttering around. And then when there's a mix of species in the cage, you can't just do one count across. You got to count each individual species. It took us about 4 to 5 hours to count everything in that market.
The count brought home the magnitude of what was happening.
It just struck us how big the issue was that in just one market, there were 16,000 birds, over 200 species being sold in one location on one day. And that really sparked off a lot of our songbird work.
Songbirds hold different value in different countries, sometimes social, sometimes economic. In Vietnam, businessmen have clubs where they gather and talk deals while listening to their birds. In Malaysia, Indonesia, and Singapore, there are competitions for songbirds, and the prize money can sometimes be significant. But the journey for a bird taken from their home in the wild is a long and difficult one, and many of them don't make it.
Okay, we'll start from the natural habitat. So this could be a forest, this could be a grassland, or even a park or a garden. Some of the methods used include using mist net, so where the birds fly in and they get trapped, or glue traps. They put this really sticky substance on branches and then they play recordings to attract the birds to come and they land on the branches and get caught. And sometimes they use nest searchers. So they look for nests where there's baby birds or eggs, and then they take the birds from there. So the transport itself is also quite an arduous journey for the birds, because songbirds are generally not very hardy. They're quite fragile. So some of the ways that birds are concealed, they put them in like plastic tubes so that they don't struggle, they don't move, or they pack them into cardboard boxes or crates, and then they hide them in hidden compartments in the vehicle, like a bus, just above the wheels or near the engine. So the temperatures can be very high. And then at the point of sale, it can be in a market like the one that I described, or increasingly it's going online. A lot of people are doing the buying and selling online because it's more convenient and it's easier to hide your identity online. And we don't have numbers yet, but some of the numbers we've got from other people range from 30 to 90% of birds who die along the way. So for every bird that you see for sale, there's probably a lot more birds that have died along the way. And I think that multiplier effect really has an impact on the wild population.
The online wildlife trade has boomed in recent years, with social media platforms and e-commerce becoming homes for illegal trade. To avoid efforts at keeping illegal wildlife trade off the internet, sellers use loopholes in their phrasing, offering free birds for a fee, or using terms like adoption. The sheer size and speed of the online market makes it a challenge to stop.
So in Indonesia and in the Philippines, we've been monitoring the online trade quite regularly, and we've worked with Facebook to close down over 3,000 groups. So this is groups, not accounts, groups. And this would affect over 1 million users and posts, because in some of these groups, you have up to like tens of thousands of users in them. And the reason that we focused on these two countries is because the volume of trade here is so high, and there's just no way that law enforcement officers are able to keep up with it. Because usually if you just close a group, they don't go away.
Shutting down a group doesn't always stop the business itself. Other groups open, which traffic helps to shut down. And when a new group pops up, Serene and the team shut them down again. This method of managing trade has led to a drop in activity on some of the platforms online. But the battle to conserve birds in the wild is an ongoing one. New traders emerge all the time. And interestingly enough, only part of the trade is lucrative, with most of the profits going to the middleman.
For the trappers, it's small change. It's not a lot of money that they're getting. And for the end buyer and seller, it depends. Sometimes it can be lucrative, but sometimes they do it as a hobby because it's an interest, or maybe it's a business that they inherited.
And when we take into consideration the condition some of these birds are in,
they've got feathers ripped out, they've got open wounds on their face from trying to shove their face through the cage bars, they've got injuries in really bad condition, and they don't have to be in a cage in this condition. They're just going to die. They're not going to earn anyone any money. It's just such a waste. A healthy, happy bird in the wild compared to just a really sad, dying bird in a cage. I think that juxtaposition just hits me a lot.
For someone who loves birds so much, seeing them in this condition, knowing that this is their fate, the work can take an emotional toll.
Having worked on wildlife trade for several years, I've become a bit desensitized to some of this. So it becomes a bit like, okay, these are the facts, and I can't let that get to me too much. If not, I get really sad. But sometimes I get mad. I get a bit frustrated seeing how many birds are killed along the way. And I try and channel that back into motivating me to keep doing what I do.
Part of the solution to keep wild songbirds out of the trade is to help reduce the demand.
Demand reduction is really important because you have to look along the whole trade chain. And when we are shifting the demand for birds away from wild and threatened species, that's one way to stop the poaching and the smuggling.
The other part is through government legislation and enforcement.
In the past, maybe 5 years or so, Indonesia, Malaysia, Singapore and Thailand have been upgrading their laws to protect wildlife, and they've included songbirds on some of their protected species lists. because they recognize that the trade is becoming a threat. And also we're seeing government agencies actually taking action to intercept where birds are being smuggled, to arrest the smugglers themselves. And this is actually really remarkable.
People play a key role in creating a long-term solution. And engaging traders and buyers, instead of just working against them, is critical to solving the issue.
I love birds in the wild, but I also have to come and understand the perspective of the other people who are buying the birds, who are trading the birds. Like, why are they doing this? And we can't completely demonize them because they are as much part of the solution as we are. So it's something I've learned along the way. You know, we have to work with all the different stakeholders, whether we agree or not, on how we approach the issue and how we see the issue.
The question of why we cage songbirds, of why they're being trafficked, comes down to our relationship with nature. And keeping them in a cage gives people access to nature they otherwise can't control. But is there another way to do this?
So most people live in cities nowadays, and we don't have ready access to the forest and more rural and more wild areas. So birds are one of the most visible wildlife that we have around us. And that's sort of an ambassador or our gateway to understanding more about nature and animals and wildlife and gaining an appreciation for them.
Even for those of us living in cities, becoming aware of the nature in our urban spaces might be the way we can create a change.
Right now, I would say wildlife and natural habitats are in a very precarious state, and it needs all the help and all the support and all the fans that it can get. And the people in the cities are very influential to deciding the fate of some of these natural spaces and these species. So if they have this appreciation of the natural world and they love birds, for example, and then they might be more inclined to make choices that would keep these birds alive in the wild. When I'm in Malaysia, the house that I live in, we've got a garden, and there's a shrike that comes to sit on the garden fence. He's a brown shrike. He's a migratory bird. He comes down from the north every winter. And shrikes are really interesting because they are songbirds, but they are predatory songbirds. So they've got quite sharp beaks, and their overall body structure is reminiscent of like a mini falcon. And usually when I'm having work meetings or working on a spreadsheet or Word document, I look out and I see the shrike sitting there, just chilling or looking for food or cleaning himself. And it's just a little respite from the human everyday things. You watch a bird doing his thing. And sometimes he just sits there and sings quietly to himself, which is very sweet. It's like a soft, warbly kind of song, like, the way I tell that it's there is by its call. It has this loud, like, ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. So when I hear that, I always look out the window and see where he is. Hello, I'm here now. Do you have any bugs for me? So he comes and visits every winter and sits in my garden, which is quite nice.
To learn more about the illegal wildlife trade, check out National Geographic's show, World's Weirdest Pets, Animal Smugglers, where you can witness some of the methods used to smuggle animals in an industry worth billions of dollars. Expedition Earth is produced by National Geographic Asia in partnership with the National Geographic Society. I'm your host, Lily Sedigat. Thank you for listening.